This is the Best of the Adam Gold Show podcast, brought to you by Coach Pete at Capital Financial Advisory Group. Visit us at capitalfinancialusa.com. This is the Adam Gold Show.
Gosh, I love Billy Horschel calling, saying, follow their employer. Gosh, that's great. The subtle shot at Greg Norman. Well, we're independent contractors. Actually, you guys are employees. We'll probably talk about this at the end of our conversation with Chip Patterson, CBSSports.com, Cover 3 podcast moderator. We'll live our indulgence about golf. We'll leave that to the end. Shall we talk college football, sir?
There's a lot that we can get to. So, yeah, let's do it.
All right, let's start with Sam Hartman's injury. Look, Wake Forest is not Alabama. So it's not like this is going to shatter the dreams of somebody who was headed to the college football playoff, more than likely. But your thoughts on a medical, non-football-related condition, not an injury. I know Hartman had a surgical procedure last night. He was on the practice field today, although he didn't practice, and he's not going to for some time. But your thoughts on what's going on with Sam Hartman?
Obviously, you know, we wish that whatever the condition or the issue is, that it's going to be resolved and that the procedure that took place is going to be able to clear things up so that he can be back. And the timetable that Dave Clawson is willing to commit to is no timetable. But if I'm to look at Wake Forest's schedule, Wake Forest can still accomplish many of the things that Wake Forest would like to accomplish this season if he is able to make it back before October 22nd. Now, October 15th is the off week for the Demon Deacons, right. So that would be time for him to have, you know, extra time in practice, extra time to get back into the rotation. But there are games that I do think, even without Sam Hartman, Wake Forest is going to be able to win. VMI certainly is going to be at that list.
Yes.
I think at Vanderbilt, they will still be favorites, even without Sam Hartman. Liberty, that is another one right there. And Army, I do think that Florida State is the one game on the first half of that schedule. Everything before that, October 15th off week, that is the one that I would say maybe flips. So if you were all over the win total of over 8.5, then yeah, this probably breaks your heart. If you think that Wake Forest was going to finish first place in the ACC Atlantic Division, which I guess would require Clemson losing multiple games because we haven't seen Wake beat Clemson. Well, everything that Wake has done has been fantastic.
Yeah,
I think that Clemson was always going to be a loss, and now I'm starting to think that Florida State is an opportunity for the Seminoles to pick up what is a much-needed win on a very tough schedule. But again, after Army, you've got the off week, and then come the games that will determine where Wake Forest is in the standings at the end of the year, what kind of bowl game there might be for the Demon Deacons, and even, you know, if to secure their place in the postseason yet again. That's where we're talking about Louisville, Boston College, NC State, North Carolina, but like games that are not going to be heavily favored one way or the other. And that is where you want the experience, you want the production, and you want the mastery of the offense that Sam Hartman provides. So if he can get back and everything can get cleared up and he can be cleared to play by October 22nd, I think Wake Forest can still accomplish many of the same things that we thought going into the year, again, with only one game really altered by his absence. That's a credit to Get Old and Stay Old. That's a credit to a system. And the fact that Dave Clawson, now one of the more tenured coaches at his current position in the ACC, has built up something really special there at Wake Forest. So incredibly significant. But again, if he's able to get it back for that really the toss-up games, the coin flips at the back half of the schedule, then Wake Forest should still finish the year where it would like to be, which is playing in a bowl game.
The flip side of that, and let's just assume that Sam Hartman can come back, and we'll say from the bye week on. I do think that, like, I don't know a ton about Liberty. I don't know a ton about Vanderbilt. But Vanderbilt, you know more about anything. So I know that. Clark Lee, the head coach at Vanderbilt, who said at SEC Media Day that his goal was to make Vanderbilt the best program in the country. Now, that is very vague, very open-ended, and I appreciate Clark Lee leaving it that way. But with a quarterback in Mitch Griffiths, who is a little undersized, although that's okay in college football, and has thrown 15 passes in 2 years in the program. Even he's still a freshman. This is his third year. I love the third year freshman. I mean, I could see that being a problem. I could see Liberty being a problem. You know more than I. You don't see those games being issues now that you don't have Sam Hartman?
Not with an adjustment that makes it a coin flip the way that I'm looking at some of those games against ACC opponents at the back end of the schedule. Wake Forest at Vanderbilt probably goes into that game with Sam Hartman favored by 2 touchdowns. Now might be closer to 9-10 points. Okay. Now 9-10 point favorites lose
sure
a lot in college football. It is college football, but what Vanderbilt's been working to boost its team speed under Clark Lee. They still don't have like girth. They still don't have muscle. They don't provide those sorts of challenges that teams from the SEC or SEC-like right teams like the Clemson Tigers, where you're able to blow up what Wake does offensively at the line of scrimmage because your defensive line is huge. That's just not the way that Vanderbilt's built. In fact, Vanderbilt relying on team speed to try to win at the margins means that they're just behind schedule for what Wake Forest has been building up to over the last 5 years. So I think that Wake Forest again goes into Nashville probably favored by a touchdown. You could lose again, yeah, but you're expected to win. And Liberty's just going to have a huge step back. Malik Willis did so much for them. Hugh Freeze is going to, on that schedule, Hugh Freeze is going to have a game or two where Liberty is very pesky, but I still imagine that that's going to be a spot where Wake Forest is going to be able to win that even without Sam Hartman at quarterback.
Chip Patterson is here as he is every Wednesday. You and I have been talking about this for a while. When the news came that the SEC was leaving CBS to go to ESPN, with like giving everything to ESPN, we speculated that CBS would look to another conference. And it does appear, and we're a long way from it being official, the Big Ten hasn't announced it, but it looks like the 3:30 Big Ten game is going to be on the I on CBS. If I said that CBS fell up, would you agree or disagree? Adam Gold here from my man, Coach Pete DeRuiter with the Capital Financial Advisory Group. We are talking retirement. All right, Coach, simple. When do we start tax planning in retirement?
We should start as soon as possible because here's one thing, Adam. Taxes are not going away.
Right.
And so the game here is we know the rules. A lot of people want to ignore the rules or act like they don't are familiar with them, but the IRS knows the rules. And so when we get to retirement, they're going to reach in and start taking some of their money out of your accounts. So the secret here is to put a force field around as much as possible by strategically moving some of our money to Roth IRA or some of the other vehicles that aren't taxed, like special life insurance policies. You can borrow against your money there and never have to pay tax on your money that you build up inside your cash value. So there are a lot of strategies here. The one strategy that does not work is ignoring it. So let's make sure to not ignore it. The next 10 people will do for you your very own tax and retirement plan that'll help you minimize taxation all the way through retirement.
800-661-7383. All you got is call, or you can text Adam to 21000 for Coach Pete DeRuiter.
As usual, these conversations are happening well above my pay grade. And I have been at this company. I've been a CBS Sports employee since 2010, and I've learned my lessons in trying to represent the company.
Right.
But what I can say from the position of just providing analysis to the way that, you know, all the moving and shaking is being done is that the Big Ten has created an opportunity. If the reports end up panning out, and we've got it from the Sports Business Journal, the New York Post, you know, the Athletic, it is well reported that your noon game is probably going to be on Fox,
right?
That your 3:30 game is on CBS, and that your primetime game would then be on NBC. What the Big Ten is doing is just tapping right into like the most basic fan. Like we always talk about the primary start in Iowa, right? Or your network comedies or your network dramas were targeted at the middle of America. Well, what conference is in the middle of America? The Big Ten.
What do you mean middle of America?
The entire
country.
Well, that's true.
It goes from freaking Annapolis to Los Angeles.
They are making this the most accessible college football products possible.
Yeah.
It is going to be, I mean, clearly there will be games on Fox Sports 1. The Big Ten Network will have its entire slate. But when you take the three biggest, the three most important or the top pick Big Ten games and you put them all on broadcast television from noon until midnight. You are making your sport and your product as accessible as possible. You don't even need a cable package to be able to watch the three biggest Big Ten games every single week. And that's, I think that's a pretty good marketing plan. And I do think that is, you know, I'm not getting too much into the media wars here, right. But as the Big Ten has ended its relationship with ESPN, and as it, you know, Fox is a 60% stakeholder in the Big Ten network. So there's the ongoing Fox ESPN battle here. You're saying we're not even worried about the cord cutters. Because all you need is a tuner to be able to access some of the most important Big Ten football every single week. And I think that's casting a really wide net, which is a great thing to do for your future.
There is no doubt about that. The look, we have talked about this for a while. I've been saying for I don't know how long that when it all shakes out, the Big Ten is going to be the biggest player financially. Now, it might not, that 3:30 window, which won't be the best Big Ten game. It'll be the noon game. But that 3:30 window, probably, I don't know if it'll do as well in the ratings as it did when it was the first CBS, first choice of the SEC game. But it's going to be two giant universities playing football. So you could put Wisconsin and Minnesota, and you've got, I don't know, 17 billion alumni who might be interested in that game because the universities are all so huge. The one thing about this deal, Chip Patterson is joining us, and you and I, we could talk about a basketball angle to this as well, and I haven't gotten good clarity on this yet. But according to Andy Katz, who works from the Big Ten Network, works from the NCAA, he reported out that an event like the Champions Classic, which ESPN owns, according to Andy Katz, and I'm just taking it one step further, neutral site game within the Big Ten footprint, which again is the United States of America,
right?
That ESPN can't air it. I mean, I just don't understand how they couldn't air the Champions Classic, which they own. I just don't understand how they couldn't air that. So I still haven't gotten clarification on that. But I guess they could if it was in New York City. Like Michigan State could play in New York City and ESPN could air it. But it does create, what happens to the Big Ten ACC Challenge?
I think what it happens is there. I go back to experience from precedent in a couple of cases. Number one, there have been times where because of what's going on within the SEC, the alignment in the schedule for big broadcast CBS to have that 8 p.m. kickoff, right? I mean, it's not something that happens very often, but I do know that in the past, there have been trades that were made once the season started unfolding. We want to flex LSU Alabama into the 8 p.m. slot. We've already used our 8 p.m. slot. So next year, you know, you get first pick during this week, and it essentially ends up being playing trading cards. And you go work your trade machine and you hit it, and hopefully the deal works and everyone agrees to it. The other thing that comes to mind, which is very similar, which is why I think we're going to end up in a place where you kind of end up negotiating some kind of trade in terms of, okay, ESPN will air the Champions Classic, but then, you know, there's some trade-off down the line. It's going to be the way that these schedules are constructed, the way that these neutral site events are done. ESPN owns the event, but ESPN might be able to sell off the broadcasts rights to Fox for a certain price.
Interesting.
Because ESPN owns bowl games, and then within, that's under ESPN events, which is an entirely different corporation from the ESPN broadcast side of things. Now, that's why ESPN has bought up all the bowl games so that they can eat from all the different bowls at the same time. Look at what I did there.
Beautiful.
But I think it's something like that where ESPN Events would then be the company that would have to negotiate such that it could be aired on another network if they would be willing to do it. It might mean the end of the Champions Classic. I don't know.
I don't think it means the end of that. I think that'll be worked out. Let's remember also that ESPN traded a Purdue-Penn State football game for Joe Buck. So that was actually a trade. That's how they got Joe Buck this year. They had to give up a football game to Fox to get it. I think the answer to the ACC Big Ten Challenge is that that's dead. And I think the answer ultimately is the ACC SEC Challenge in basketball. And that'll be maybe not as big a deal because the Big Ten is a better basketball league historically with more interest in it. But I think for a preseason game, I think ACC SEC Challenge will be fine, which also creates the possibility of more Duke-Kentucky. And maybe that does mean the end of the Champions Classic.
ESPN would play Duke in Kentucky every single weekend if John Calipari and John Shire would agree to it. Every single Saturday night, we're going to have Duke, Kentucky at 6 p.m. Eastern time.
Seven-game series.
Forever. Yes, that's how you make the money in this industry.
All right, we're going to take a quick break with Chip Patterson. When we come back, forget about the coaches poll. CBS has their 1 through 131. We're going to go through all of it starting at... Well, we're not. We're not going to start 131 and go through all of it. But we are going to talk about the poll. Also, we're going to make fun of the coaches poll for one vote. For one vote. We got other things to do as well with Chip Patterson every Wednesday here on the Adam Gold Show. Well, I'll ask Chip Patterson, who joins us every Wednesday. Have you ever gone down the rabbit hole of live from Daryl's house on YouTube?
You've recommended it before, and I've yet to follow through on your recommendation. But I was listening to him on Questlove Supreme, I guess maybe like a couple weeks ago, and it reminded me that I need to do that.
It's great, and they do a lot of covers, but tremendous stuff. It's a great episode with Darius Rucker, where they recorded in Charleston. Phenomenal, phenomenal episode. So I recommend it, but they played... It's his band from Live from Daryl's House that travels with him. It's just great. All right, Chip Patterson, let's get to some more college football things. I'm gonna talk about the coaches poll just for this reason, and then we're going to get to the CBS poll because I want to get your perspective on basically the landscape of it. How did Texas get a vote for first?
I've got theories. So, among the 66 coaches who participate in coaches poll, there are two that are in a very unique position in the non-conference schedule for Texas.
Okay.
Now, Texas opens the season against ULM. And, you know, you go through and... I don't see Bowden. Okay, so no Tommy Bowden. Right. Maybe it wasn't him. But week two. You know, Texas plays week two, Adam?
No.
The Alabama Crimson Tide.
Oh, gosh.
And if I need to make sure that Texas has as high a ranking as possible, if I need to make sure that we are out here talking about how good Texas is, we don't want to lose sight of how good Texas is. We don't want to be looking past the Longhorns. I need my boys to know that somebody thinks that they're the best team in the country. I think Nick Saban might have been that first place vote. Now, the week after Texas, the week after Alabama, Texas plays UTSA, who you might remember won 12 games last year, went 12-1, and nearly went undefeated during the regular season. North Texas spoiled it a little bit late. Jeff Traylor, who is the head coach, is an amazing personality. Hot as fish grease, as he says, introductory presser. And I think that Jeff Traylor might have similar motivations to Nick Saban in trying to gas up Mr. All Gas, No Breaks, Steve Sarkisian as much as possible. Because as Reddit CFB pointed out a little while ago, and I can't stop thinking about, the most incredible week that we could have in college football in September would be for Texas to beat Alabama. We have an entire week of Texas's back and then lose at home to UTSA.
That would be awesome.
So anything that we could do either on the Alabama side or UTSA to gas up and boost the rankings of the Texas Longhorns to make them feel as big-headed as possible, I think are two culprits for Texas's first place vote are on the month of September on their schedule. It's either Nick Saban or Jeff Traylor.
Gosh, this is just, your mind is beautiful. Chip Patterson.
I think about these things.
Joins us every Wednesday here. All right. Alabama, Ohio State, Georgia. Look, it's no point even talking about it. It doesn't matter. One of those three teams is the best team in the country as we start the season. They have the most pro prospects. All of that, blah, blah, blah. Coaches poll at Clemson. I think you guys had Utah as number four. I'm just going to ask this question. Is the gap between three and whoever is fourth substantial?
Yes. With Clemson probably has the best potential to finish at four, but there is some real damage that's been done. I think I haven't seen all of the ballots for the CBS Sports 131,
right?
But I think there was some real damage that was done with the performance of DJ Uiagalelei last year, where they think that he's not going to get fixed and that we're not going to see improved play, and you're still probably going to see Clemson win the ACC Atlantic and win the ACC, but they see it really as a one-sided defense-first kind of dominance. So that's why you saw Utah pop up, because Cam Rising is a very, very good quarterback. Tavion Thomas is a very, very good running back. That offense in general has been strong under Utah, and Kyle Whittingham comes with his own reputation. What we saw in the back and forth of that epic Rose Bowl between Ohio State and Utah, of which the Utes will bring back not all of their key pieces. Devin Lloyd at linebacker was a huge stud for them last year, but enough key pieces that you look at it and say, okay, Utah is going to be really, really good. We were higher on the Utes as a unit than the coaches poll, and then I think a lot of other teams. But you asked about the gap, because it's top three, and then the next group is like five to six teams. It's like spot number four through spot number nine. I think you could throw them up and they all land, and you could sort them in any order, and I'm not going to come up with the big argument. Then I think you start to see the next jump down once you get to about 10 or 11.
Yeah, it's funny when we talk about, and you and I had a, I think the bulk of our conversation last week was about, does the sport of college football need an expanded playoff to save the sport? And you, even though I'm against, and I think you are too, an expanded playoff for practical reasons, I do believe that's for survival. They need it. And the biggest argument I heard against an expanded playoff, and Dabo Swinney said this last year, is that, man, that fourth team doesn't have a chance. Why are we doing this? And do you think the fourth team has a chance, barring injury to somebody, you know, a key injury to one of the top three?
Does the third team have a chance? Is it possible?
is it a top two?
So you cannot look past the many numbers which say that Stetson Bennett IV is a top 10 quarterback. You know, his his QBR, his efficiency numbers, his yards per attempt. There is sort of anecdotally what your eyes tell you, especially when you line him up next to Bryce Young. And when you line them up next to Ohio State's C.J. Stroud, and you say, well, these two look like they're going to be battling to be the first quarterback picked in the NFL draft. And you look like you're going to get drafted by Bill Belichick in the fifth. You know, there's just a major drop off in the quarterback play. But Georgia was so good everywhere else
right,
that it made his life easier, and he was able to have that. So when you talk about the top two, you know what? I don't even know if all three are going to make it to the college football playoff. I think that it's possible that all three could make it to the college football playoff. But when we really start to, you know, do the fine tooth combing of the top five in college football right now, the reason why Alabama is an overwhelming favorite is that Nick Saban wasn't kidding. I mean, last year was a rebuilding year. They were thin. They were inexperienced. They took injuries along the offensive line and had to put freshmen out there that weren't ready to play. And it required being down two first-round wide receivers for the offense to finally buckle against Georgia after they beat the Bulldogs in the SEC championship game. Much love to Georgia. I am glad that that starved fan base finally got to celebrate. Yeah. They'd recruited enough five stars and four stars. They'd been had all the talent, and it's all in your backyard. It was preposterous that Georgia had not added another national championship to the single one in their trophy case.
Right.
But when we're looking at this team, it took an extraordinary set of circumstances for Alabama to fall short there in the national championship game. I think Alabama's beefed up. I think they're deeper. and those freshmen that weren't ready are going to be ready. And oh yeah, Alabama got Georgia's best wide receiver and added it to its roster. Alabama got Louisville's best wide receiver, added it to its roster. And Alabama got one of the best all-purpose players in the ACC in Georgia Tech's Jahmyr Gibbs and added it to its roster, all around, oh, I don't know, the reigning Heisman Trophy winner in Bryce Young. There is an overwhelming number one. Then there is a top two, and then there is a top three. I think it is not a debate in terms of that.
The reigning Heisman Trophy winner, and they also have the guy who should have won.
Well, Will Anderson.
Heisman Trophy, who I voted for last year. Will Anderson is just amazing.
And then, by the way, add Dallas Turner to your sort of like watch list for your eyes, because he is, everyone's going to be focused on trying to stop Will Anderson from having 16 and a half sacks again this year.
He's phenomenal.
And Dallas Turner was a freshman who flashed in a big way. And I think that he will be the benefactor of all these offenses trying to provide extra blockers to Will Anderson. And you're just not going to be able to stop Alabama in the pass rush. It's funny. There was a time where Alabama, with its 3-4 defense and all of its size and all of its five stars, they would squeeze the life out of you. And that's how you win with A.J. McCarron. That's how you win with Jacob Coker. You've got Derrick Henry and Trent Richardson and Eddie Lacy. You just hand the ball off 40 times a game, let your defense go out there and make the other team quit. Well, now Alabama's defense makes you quit with terrifying pass rushers that are ready to fly at, like, predatory cat-like speeds and crush your quarterback and speed up their clock. Alabama has adapted and adjusted. They are high-flying on both sides of the ball. Again, number one with a strong dot for me. Then there's a top two. Then there's a top three. And then there's a gap as Clemson, Utah, Notre Dame, Oklahoma, Michigan all try to make an argument for why they might be able to be the fourth best team at the end of the season.
I'm throwing NC State in there because I want to. All right, Chip Patterson, before we get out of here, you mentioned Stetson Bennett the fourth. And if I'm not mistaken, for much of last year, you jokingly referred to him as Hudson Swafford. So right. Hudson Swafford was one
That's our transition into
so beautiful. God, it's on a platter for me, Chip. I termed yesterday a 3-1 win for the PGA Tour. It could have gone either way. You got to the 17th tee, and you were two up. You still didn't drag it into the barn, but ultimately, the LIV players couldn't prove irreparable financial harm by being left out of the FedEx Cup playoffs. Is that a proper way of looking at it? And I have an idea going forward, but what are your thoughts on the ruling?
It kind of feels like we're gonna get a double or nothing, right? Like, meet me back on the first tee tomorrow and let's run it back. I don't think that this is the end of litigation and the end of the pettiness between all of this. The immediate result of, you know, these golfers not being able to participate in the FedEx Cup, I don't think that there's a huge adjustment to the way that we view, you know, the action in Memphis this week. I don't think that there's a huge adjustment to, you know, where we're standing, looking at the back and forth. I do think that there are some comments that we got from this ruling that will be significant when it comes time for the majors to make decisions. I think that there are some comments and some things that came to light that are significant when they try to start making their argument to the official world golf rankings about the way that their tournament should be treated. And of course, that plays right into the decision of, you know, what to do with the LIV Golf Tour and how to let it play into major championship contention. I don't think that the PGA Tour should be gloating about it, though, because when we start to look at the reported and inevitable, in some people's eyes, exit of a Cam Smith and a Mark Leishman.
Yep. Over the crossbar! And the Hurricanes have won the Stanley Cup!
June 19, 2006, but it all started May 6, 1997 with the announcement that the Hartford Whalers were coming to North Carolina. It's a story of transition, of heartbreak, of figuring it out on the fly. The Canes Corner look at the 25th anniversary of the move. Presented by the Aluminum Company of North Carolina. Listen now. Find Canes 25th Anniversary wherever you get your podcast.
You are starting to look at a future where the PGA Tour is simply the American-based tour and the LIV Golf Tour is more of the global tour. And the PGA Tour fancied itself as the best golf in the entire world and was the best place for the best golf in the entire world. But as more and more global stars continue to leave and go to LIV Golf, then that means that PGA Tour is no longer the best golf in the world. It's American golf.
I'm not sure I 100% agree with it being the best American golf, especially since at least half of the LIV Tour is going to be played in the United States. I also don't think that, I mean, there are going to be more players going. I'm not Cam Smith, Mark Leishman, who's really struggled this year. He won't be the last. There will be more. I do think that Cam Smith has a chance to be the asshat of the year, playing in all three events, maybe even winning the FedEx Cup, and then the next day saying, see ya, which would be the giant middle finger towards the PGA Tour. But I have an idea. Because the President's Cup has a chance to be completely irrelevant based on who's not there. Although Tom Kim, I am team Tom Kim. Gosh, that kid is amazing. How about in non-Ryder Cup years, because none of the Ryder Cuppers will be able to play on the European Ryder Cup team, PGA Tour versus LIV. Oh my gosh, would this be good TV? We might actually have fights.
I think that's what LIV wants. I think that LIV would love to be able to, like, they LIV would love to be able to create a WCW versus NWO.
Mm-hmm.
Like, LIV would love to be able to create the television spectacle of our best team against your best team, and let's sell the television rights for it. We're talking about this as golf fans. It would be incredible theater. I would absolutely sign up to watch. And I think that is probably one of the end games that has been entertained, is that you create these rival tours and then you set up these storylines that play out in the majors, and then you create team events at the end of the year. I mean, it is very much part of the long-term brainstorming, I'm sure, when the people got together and started creating, or at least even pitching, some of the people that are leaving to go to LIV Golf.
I mean, there were people who would watch on like a Monday and a Tuesday that ridiculous Tavistock between the two country clubs in Orlando, Florida, that played each other. This would be super high ratings golf on TV. Chip, you and I just did it, so we're taking credit, and we get money for it. You're the best, Chip Patterson.
But I don't want to get too tied into my commitments here. We're dealing with some very...
No, it's all right. It's ours. You and okay. I, we're going to share. We're going to reap the benefits of this.
Love it.
All right,
love it.
Talk to you next week.
That's good. Y'all be well.
All right. We had to go a little bit over. We had some stoppage time because Chip and I got carried away.
Which it happens.
We
always do.
It always happens on Wednesday. All right, Victoria, take us away.
And now your halftime entertainment.
Okay, so, big news. It's National S'mores Day. Are you a s'mores person?
Here's my problem with s'mores.
Okay,
I have no use for marshmallow.
Okay, I can see that.
I love chocolate. Dark chocolate better than milk, but I'm not going to debate it with people. And I love graham cracker.
Yes.
So, I just don't like the marshmallow.
I can see that. So. My dad's a Peeps fan, and I can't get down with Peeps.
Excuse you?
Yeah. You've never seen or heard of Peeps?
No, I've heard of Peeps.
Those are okay, though? Is that what you're saying?
No, I've just never heard an adult like them.
Oh, yes. My dad is
really?
One. Yes. One of one, I guess, because he loves them. Loves them. But see, maybe that's what you need to, like, fancy up a s'more.
So
you need to change it up or something. Because, you know, some people will make them bougie, and they'll put, like, Reese cups in them, or they'll use the cinnamon sugar graham crackers.
Well, that's not... Now we're changing the s'more, not
doing
not
a s'more game anymore.
The former producer of this program, forget his name, used to like slam people. Like, you'll take a grilled cheese sandwich and you'll put something on it,
like tomato or
chicken. It's like, nah, man, now you're talking about a melt.
It's no longer
a grilled cheese, and he has a point. But I will just say that. Yeah, if you like s'mores, it's okay. Embrace it.
Here's the other question. Why are we doing it when it's hot outside? That's usually a campfire activity.
Yeah.
It's like 1,000 degrees. Why am I going to want to stand by a campfire and do this?
It's a very good point. National S'mores Day should be like in November.
October. Yes. Yeah. October's perfect for bonfire
the
weather.
The Saturday of Thanksgiving weekend.
I know.
That's National S'mores Day. We just fixed it.
Why can't I make the rules? Okay. Next up. So I'm a huge, for whatever reason, Carolina Panther fan.
What do you mean, for whatever reason?
They just disappoint me so bad. It's like an abusive relationship. I have so much love for them, and they just disappoint me.
Well, yes.
Or last season, perfect analogy, it's like when you first start dating someone, and they make Valentine's awesome because they give you great things, and then the rest of the year they stink. And it's like, what is going on here? Anyway, I digress. It's FanFest tomorrow, which I have been to multiple times. Now, it starts at 7. I'm telling you this a day ahead of time because it feels like it takes a day to get there. So, you know, coming from Raleigh. I would say also bring a poncho. Because the last experience I had, it was a torrential downpour. So that kind of put a damper on things. And I checked, and Charlotte, there is about a 50% chance. So that means it's going to happen.
Yes, they get rain, unlike some of us. Although we're in a pattern where we're getting a lot of rain anyway. So good. Fan Fest is always fun. Man, that was do stuff for the kids. It's all about kids.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you.
Right. And us suckers who love them.
I'm sorry always. You're going to be stuck here.
That's
and
okay.
You can't
I get
go
to hang out with
Fest.
You. It's oh, just wow. as fun.
Gosh,
you know, I'll hear all the Panther
lie.
News I need to.
It's such a lie. Just, it's all right. You don't you don't have to like
it's okay.
shower me with.
You know what? The Panthers are on national news nonstop nowadays, so I feel like I'm already there.
We talked about this yesterday.
We did, yeah.
I mean, stop.
It's insane. What are we doing? Okay.
Well, all it really highlights is that there's not that much to talk about.
I know. Tell me it's summer. During football season,
right, exactly.
without telling me, summer. Yeah, exactly. And last up, because we're short on time.
No, we're good. You're good. You're good.
Okay, okay.
You're fine.
All right, so it's also National Lazy Person Day, like being lazy, but this doesn't sound like people being lazy. So apparently people make an average of 122 decisions a day or every 8 minutes. So that's another way to put it in perspective.
Interesting. I'm trying to think what decisions I've made today.
I know. Well, and they're counting, this poll, I say, is counting things like what to watch on TV, what to eat, what to wear, probably whether to make that turn or go this direction.
Okay.
But you know what? People need to make better decisions when it comes to Twitter, because sometimes that's another decision maker.
Yeah,
they should probably avoid.
Sometimes that decision should be just to log off.
Yes, exactly.
But that would also be a decision, and that's fine.
I know.
National Lazy Person Day.
Yeah.
I'm surprised that National Lazy Person Day actually has a date.
I know. For some people, it's every day.
It's just, no, just.
Or it's a lifestyle.
I don't know. When should National Lazy Person Day be? I don't know.
Right. And they don't make decisions.
Nothing.
Not 122 of them. So who's going to, you know.
Interesting.
I know. It
okay.
is interesting.
I like that.
Okay. Well, and you can chime into this one more so. As a Mets fan. You love the Mets, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
All right. Apparently, fans are already comparing Matt Vogelbach to the modern version of Babe Ruth. Is this too soon?
Well, I mean, it's other than it being inaccurate. Yes, it would be too soon,
yeah.
but it's entirely inaccurate.
Right.
I think they're talking about Babe Ruth when at the end of his career when Babe Ruth was a little fat.
Yeah.
But to me, he's like Refrigerator Perry.
Yes.
He's a decent hitter. He's not an amazing hitter. And he doesn't pitch.
No.
Like, Shohei Ohtani is actually Babe Ruth. Because he did something, I believe, yesterday that only Babe Ruth has done, which is pitch a certain amount of innings in a game, strike out, whatever, and hit a home run.
Mm-hmm.
So, Ohtani is actually Babe Ruth.
Yeah.
No, Matt Vogelbach is not.
You're not one of those fans.
He's a nose tackle.
Yeah. Exactly.
He's funny.
I did see a comparison of the pictures, and I'm like, okay, well, I can see maybe a resemblance there, but when it comes to
just at the end of his career was Babe Ruth kind of portly. He was just big back in the day.
Yeah. Well, okay, and this last one. Now, we all know that Aaron Rodgers might be a plant person, but are you a plant person?
Meaning?
Do you have plants at your house? Can you keep them alive?
Yes. We have plants. They're not mine.
Right.
My wife has some orchids, which have to be watered every once in a while.
Mm-hmm.
But we have a little bit of a tomato and a cucumber garden
there you go.
Outside. So, but those are all my wife's hobbies.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember the last time I watered a plant.
Yeah.
But I'm not, I don't, when I have had them, I don't kill them.
Right.
So I used to have a little herb garden, but okay. I don't have one of those right now.
Yeah. No, so. Well, there's apparently a poll out there asking people if they're plant people. I love plants. I don't kill them fast. Sometimes it's a gradual right. thing, but apparently only 33% of people actually keep plants alive. The rest of them don't even dabble in it. So currently right now, fun fact, I have watermelons in my driveway. Because you and I both live out in the woods.
Oh, yes.
And I like to garden every now and again, but deers don't allow that so much.
That is
so,
true.
Yeah, it's a little experiment. It's
watermelon
working.
In your driveway.
Yes, I have a huge tub that I'm like, okay, if I can surround it by cars and things like that,
sure.
maybe deers won't eat them.
Right.
It's working so far. I'll have to show you a picture.
Okay.
It's
I
working.
Like that. Growing the watermelon, pumpkins all grow the hey. Same type of way. Cucumbers yeah. also grow that way.
Yes.
They grow on a vine. And they just kind of spread out everywhere.
And they go crazy. Yeah. They go everywhere.
Awesome.
So, yeah, that's it.
Well done. All right, we're going to place bets. We haven't heard from Dennis, right?
No, we have
Good.
Not.
Good. Don't answer the phone.
This is the Adam Gold Show.
Over the crossbar! And the Hurricanes have won the Stanley Cup!
June 19, 2006. But it all started May 6, 1997 with the announcement that the Hartford Whalers were coming to North Carolina. It's a story of transition, of heartbreak, of figuring it out on the fly. The Canes Corner look at the 25th anniversary of the move. Presented by the Aluminum Company of North Carolina. Listen now. Find Canes 25th Anniversary wherever you get your podcasts.